Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Martinis. This is Danielle, and we have
Mia.
Woo woo!
You might remember me. I'm kind of cool, I guess. Is it three episodes now?
This might be your fourth.
Yeah, I think so.
It's gonna be like a SNL Five Timers Club. You know how those.
Oh my god, we should have that.
I should. We should get you robes.
Oh my god, yeah, I could totally go for that. Just like some really nice fabric, like. I could go for a weighted blanket. You guys should give out weighted blankets.
Oh, that's good. You know what? That would actually be so on point because it's for anxiety. And like 3/4 of our episodes are all about anxiety and mental illness and everything.
3/4 of my brain is anxiety. So that works too.
Perfect. People have been asking for this episode for so long. And Dad isn't here today. He is working.
Boo.
It is Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day out there.
So I like that it's me and you. I mean, I always miss Dad when he can't be in episodes. But I don't know. It's nice Mother's Day. Sit here. I get to have a really nice conversation with you. We finished watching Heartstopper.
Oh my god, so good.
Do you want to tell people how much I cried during the last episode?
Spoilers.
No spoilers.
Oh, no spoilers?
No
okay.
Spoilers. I want everybody to watch Heartstopper on Netflix.
Oh my god, watch it. It's so important. It's so good. It's like, this isn't really a spoiler. It's just like, it's so important to watch because it's like, it's such a good show. And it's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like, it manages to stay away from most harmful tropes, and it's like everyone's happy, no one dies, and like honestly, you'd be surprised at like how necessary and important that is, and like how like uncommon it is,
especially for a teen show,
right?
Yeah, it's great. Everybody go out there and watch that. But today, so you've done your coming out episode. We did an episode with Chloe Hayden,
yeah,
about neurodiversity, and that was before you were diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
You did the episode with Ian.
That was recent. That was actually the night we got Momo.
Oh, that's the night we got our cat. All right.
Yeah.
And now we are going to talk a little bit about your journey getting diagnosed with, all right, do you want to tell everybody what your diagnosis is?
So my diagnosis ended up being autism, ADHD, and an unspecified learning disorder, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So basically what that means, I guess, is that my brain, that means I'm neurodiverse, which basically means that my brain doesn't function within the norm as it would be, I guess. I guess that's the best way of explaining it. It's like being neurodiverse, that includes like anyone who has autism, ADHD, any sort of learning disability, OCD.
I was going to ask if mental illness is under that umbrella.
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. So it's just basically you're not neurotypical. You fall somewhere else on the spectrum.
Right. Although that's not confined to the autistic spectrum. It's the entire spectrum of brain work.
Okay. Right. Okay. Because neurodiverse, it doesn't have to, you could be neurodiverse and not be on the spectrum of autism.
Yeah.
Okay. And during this episode, I want to say a few things. I am probably going to mess up some language. You are amazing at, you take such care in learning all the terminology. You've done that with LGBTQ terminology.
I work my best. Yeah.
You do. And you have, you know, when it comes to autism and the spectrum and mental illness and everything, you make it a point to be really good about language.
Basically, I'm the politically correct one of the family, if you wanted to put it into layman's terms.
That's true. But I am not quite as good. I'm also of another generation, and most people listening to this are of another generation. And we're working on that. So most people listening to this, although I hope a lot of people your age and younger will listen also. So just be patient with me.
But and kid friendly.
And what?
Kid friendly.
What's kid friendly? Oh, be kid friendly.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, that's good so that everybody can listen. Okay, but people want to know, and I want to know, when did you start thinking about getting evaluated? When did this start?
So at the beginning of the pandemic, I mean, everyone was questioning themselves, their life choices, who they were as people, yada, yada, yada. I was one of those very many people. And I was on TikTok, which I know how this sounds, but, like, a lot of it did come from social media. Like, for ages, I'd been, like, going on social media. I'd been seeing posts about autism and ADHD. And it's just like, that sounds like me, but let's not go too deeply into that. And so I was just like, okay, I have way too much time on my hands. What do I do with it? And, I ended up having a quarter life crisis.
Okay.
Although I'm not 25 yet. So, 10 years behind the quarter life crisis.
Teen angst.
Yeah, let's call it teen angst for the time being. And I was like, who am I? What am I doing? Like, and I always felt like there was something missing, and I always felt weird compared to other kids, which I definitely am. And it was just like, okay, it feels like there's something off here. So like, mm-hmm. What's going on? And, I started thinking and thinking about it. And after months I was like, okay, yeah, it's like, I think it was, like, a whole year before I ended up coming to you about it, really. Like, mm-hmm. Almost a whole year.
And throughout your life, because people say to me, well, how come you didn't realize it? You know, as your mom, how come I didn't realize it? And throughout your life, there's always been quirks, differences. Your eating when you were younger, you were, and you still are, what people would call a picky eater. But I guess when you were younger, people would always say, oh, it'll pass. And a lot of it had to do with textures. And, you really would eat just carbs. I mean, pasta and, pancakes or waffles, or like there wasn't a lot of variety. If anything was different, then you could tell like one type of waffle from another, and
that's still true today.
Yeah,
yeah. Important to point out.
Yes, yeah. You had a lot of that when you were growing up, and you never really outgrew it. In fact, I think it got worse. That is definitely one characteristic of ASD, right, is eating issues, and yours really was to the extreme. And another one that you had, I think, in my opinion, when you were growing up was the social component of it.
That's still very true today again.
Yeah, but you definitely have found your place and you found your people. You're so definitely good at like seeking out your people, but it has always been a struggle. And you definitely weren't maybe interested in the same things as your friends, right?
Right.
You always had special interests. Do you want to explain what a special interest is?
So special interests are like, so you know how like you have that thing you really like, and you have like your list of interests, except it's kind of different for autistic people because we get deeper into them than other people do. And we make like, sometimes we make our whole life revolve around it. And like, we have this list and like, okay, so this is something like, it's always like going through my brain. Like when I was younger, it was Harry Potter. Now it's like cartoons. And it's just like the thing that like, let's say you have a kid who's like I was, like they're really into Harry Potter and like, and they're like, I don't know how
laser focused.
Yeah, they're laser focused on it. Like, it's all they want to talk about. It's all that they can think about. That's kind of what a special interest does to you. It's like, well, the saying does to you, it sounds like a negative thing, but it's like, that's kind of what a special interest does. It like kind of takes up your whole mind. That's not a bad thing. I think that's even like more fun like that way, because like then you like get really into things, and I can't imagine like not like hyper focusing on the thing I really like.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that was something also growing up, like you said, the Harry Potter, and, you know, you went through phases, right, where you got really, really deeply obsessed with things.
Those would be hyperfixations. Hyperfixations are kind of like special interests, and some of them do turn into special interests, but hyperfixations are like kind of a label for those fixes. Like, it's like a short period of time where you get really into something. Like, right now I'm really into like Our Flag Means Death, Heartstopper, etc. Mm-hmm.
Right. And a lot of people get obsessed with shows and everything. I mean, certainly like when I watch a show, I become obsessed with it. Like I watch Severance, and Aunt Amy and I watched, like, you know, listened to 6 podcast episodes about it after and everything. But then we were done. You know what I mean? Like it took like a couple days. We were really, really into it. Or maybe something that comes up, like, you know, I always talk about The Best Little House in Texas because it was my first movie and one of my favorite movies. So it comes up from time to time. But I haven't been hyper fixated on it for the last 40 years.
Right.
So, you know, it's a different level of, can I say obsession? Is that?
Yeah. No. I mean, so like the difference is like someone with autism or ADHD, like, they'll like get really deep into it. Like they'll do as much research as they possibly can on it. It'll like become like their area of focus for the longest, as long as they can stretch it out and like gain serotonin from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so those were things that you had growing up that I noticed were different. However, as we spoke about in the Chloe Hayden episode, girls oftentimes go undetected when it comes to ASD. And I think that I, as much as I knew something was different, or I don't want to say off, but it just different. It wasn't in line with all of everything I knew about autism, everything we're taught about autism, because we're taught about it from all the research which has been done in boys and males.
And I also want to take this opportunity to discuss masking, especially because we're discussing girls with autism, because that's something to, like, you have to, like, really look out for, because, like, in girls, like, it can be so harmful. Masking is when, like, you study social cues, and, like, it's especially common with girls who have autism, but any person who's autistic can do this. So masking is when you, like, study social cues and, like, you, like, try to shape your personality around those social cues and, like, what other people like, and, like, you change the way you act and, like, who you are around other people, basically. Like, you have... you can have a different personality for, like, a different friend group, and, like, different personality for, like, the different people you meet. And I've heard it be referred to as code switching as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that is something that you definitely really did when you were younger, before you got diagnosed.
I still do it to this day. And you still do it.
And I think to a certain degree, we all kind of do it, right? We all kind of mold ourselves to be like we're a different person than we are at our jobs, than we are when we're with our friend groups. But this is really feeling like you are not being yourself at all, right?
Yeah, I don't think it could really be compared. Because, like, yeah, you're kind of like, you can be like kind of like a different person with your friend group, I guess. But, like, with, like, masking, it's, like, taking time. Not, I mean, like, kind of, like, your brain is, like, in, like, survival mode, basically.
Mm-hmm. So you came to me, was it March of last year,
November, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. December, actually. December of
2020.
Yes.
So you came to me in December of 2020, and you said... Well, you tell it because you were so nervous to tell me. And this is the part that, as a parent, I'll never forgive myself for. And this is the part that I say is so interesting, because I think of myself as such an accepting mom. And you had zero issue coming out. I mean, you didn't even really come out to us. You just sort of were like, this is who I am. And
yeah,
and
I think Ian was the one who accidentally told Dad.
Okay, but it, whatever it was, it, I don't think you were nervous about telling us about coming out.
Yeah,
and
no.
With but with this, you really were.
Because, well, the thing is, the difference between coming out and being like, hey, I think I'm autistic, it's like, coming out, it's just like, okay, yeah, it's something I've been thinking about for a long time. Like, yeah, it's like, this is, but it's like, it, work didn't really, like, go into this for me. Like, for some people, like, coming out can be, like, really harrowing and stuff. And, like, I hate coming out. But it's also, like, okay, it's just like, yeah, this is who I am. Just, like, it's just, like, a thing now. It's out there. But, like, with being, like, hey, I think I'm autistic, it's, like, we have to do work for this. Like, I wanted to get diagnosed. And, like, I'm getting a diagnosis. Like, you obviously know now. Like, it takes time and lots of money. And, mm-hmm. like, it, and, like, effort has to be put into it. Like, you have to, like, search for the doctor. You have to, like, find someone who's good. You have to, like, pay for it. And, like,
Oh, like, so you were worried that it was going to be a huge burden on us.
Partially, yeah. But it was also just, like, I didn't want to be dismissed for it, I guess. Because, like, with my sexuality, it was, like, I knew how accepting you guys were and stuff. But, like, I didn't really, like, know, like, what your thoughts were on this particular thing. And, like, I was just, like, what if she dismisses it? What if she tells me, like, oh, no way, I know you. I've known you for 16 years. I'm your mother. Like, obviously, I didn't think of you in that, like, negative sense. It's just, like, there's always that sort of anxiety when you're, like, telling someone something big.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So when you told me, I remember you saying, I really need to talk to you about something. And my heart was racing because I thought to myself, oh, my God, you know, there's as a teenager and with social media and everything, I'm like a thousand things go through your mind when your kid says, you know, I want to tell you something, you know, and it could be a whole bunch of different stuff. And when you said, I think I have autism, I want to get diagnosed.
Was that like relief?
Oh, it was
a relief.
It was a relief. I mean, it was also everything you said. Everything you said was, you know, there were parts of my mind that were like, oh my God, okay, we're already dealing with the parent. I'm just being honest, you
yeah,
know,
I understand.
For all parents out there and everything. There was
it's
part
important
of,
to be honest with
yeah, yeah. I was like, oh my God, we've dealt with this pandemic and, you know, I already can't get our lives together and I can't even keep on top of all our dentist appointments and everything. And now I have to research and this and that. And I don't know anything about, like you said.
Yeah, that's part of what I was worrying about.
Yeah.
And I honestly like felt this sense of like guilt, like make you have to do
yeah.
this because I knew like how much you were struggling.
Right, right. I feel terrible that you didn't want to tell me, but it is true that, you know, once those words are out there and once it's out there, it's sort of like, okay, now we start this journey that feels really uphill.
Yeah, well, also, like, the entire time it wasn't just you. It was just, like, I was also so unsure of myself. It was, like, this is something that I think I'm going through, but, like, how can I be so sure, like, mm-hmm. until I get that diagnosis? Like, and there's so much stigma around self-diagnosis, which really shouldn't exist because, like, who knows you better than yourself, right? And, like...
Well, I think one of the worries is, and this is what happened, so we researched and found a neuropsychologist. The wait list was ridiculous at almost everywhere. I mean, it was... I couldn't believe it. I was calling doctors and they were telling me 6 months, 7 months, a year. And, you know, when you have a kid who has, first of all, waited to tell you and also that you know is so upset and so feeling so much stress and angst and everything, you don't want them to have to wait 6 or 7 months.
Yeah.
You know, in that you were definitely like you wanted it done now. You
yeah,
know, like
I
you wanted,
so
you were so ready. So that part of it was hard also. And I finally found someone who was like 4 month wait and they were supposedly really good and everything. But once we found the neuropsychologist and everything and how I found her was actually you know, through Aunt Amy, who knew somebody who had gotten her daughters diagnosed. And so, you know, you sort of, you, if you're open enough, you can ask people. And thankfully, we are open enough that we were like, hey, you know, we need help with this. Who did you use? Or, and that does make it easier. But one thing the neuropsychologist said when we first went in there was that she was worried, and we have to take a break soon, so I want to put this out there and you'll answer it when we get back. She was worried that you had been very influenced by TikTok, because I guess that was the trend of what was going on. A lot of kids, especially girls, were coming in to get diagnosed because they had sort of been influenced by TikTok and thought that they were neurodiverse because they had seen all these TikToks and were like, oh, well, I have that trait, so therefore I must, you know, be on the spectrum also. So there's been sort of this mass, this mass like movement of girls self-diagnosing themselves and wanting to get diagnosed because of TikTok. And that was one thing the neuropsychologist first asked me was, is she just doing this because of TikTok? And I think she asked you that also.
Yeah,
she did. All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back. And I want you to tell me about that, because I know that TikTok right now is having a huge influence. So we'll be right back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, I don't know that I would like really consider myself influenced by TikTok. And like, it was something that was like sort of building up like for ages. And honestly, like, I don't think it's such a bad thing that, like, girls are out there trying to get diagnosed. Because, like there's so much out there. Like, there's such, like, a lack of diagnosis, I guess, especially with girls. And it's, like, so good that this is being normalized for young women who are, like, starting to question themselves. Like, because, yeah, sure, maybe a bunch of these girls don't actually have autism, but a good amount of them do, I'm sure. And, like, it's, like, so important that this is a topic that's being normalized. It's just, like, maybe there is some misinformation out there, or maybe it's just, like, that they're not doing the research that they need to be doing, or maybe they're, like, not taking enough time to think about it, like I was. And it's just, like, I honestly don't know their stories, so I don't really know how to speak for them, but
but for you, it just felt more like representation, not like it was you were feeling really influenced by it. You were just sort of like, oh, yeah, that looks like me.
Honestly, I was scared that I was being influenced by it at the time. But it's also just like, but it was also kind of that. It's just like, oh, it was like, so there was like so much self-doubt in it. It was like, oh, but I don't know if I'm that extreme, or oh, I don't know if I do that, like, as much as they probably do it, you know? Or like, oh, I don't really identify with that trait.
And you really start to question yourself, right? Like, am I making this up? Am I blowing it out of proportion?
That was such a big issue with me. I have, like, I'm so bad with that, like, with imposter syndrome and stuff. And it's like, it was just, like, it was such a, like, rough time for me, because, like, I was questioning, like, my entire life. Like, when your kid comes to you and they say, hey, I think I have autism, it's something to take seriously. Because, like, this, like, most of the time, this is going to be something, like, that they've thought over for, like, ever. So, like, I think, like, the first thing you do is, like, okay, so what, so I'm completely here, I'm ready to support you, but what makes you think this way? And, like, why don't we do some research together, I guess? Mm-hmm. Like, those should be your first thoughts.
And I think a lot of times parents, on the other aspect of it, the other side to it, don't come to their kids because they're worried that their kids are going to be like, oh, my goodness, how can you think this about me and all this? But a lot of times it's actually a relief for the kid, right?
In my case, it definitely probably would have been. But, I mean, I would understand if it's, like, oh my God, what? No, I couldn't be that. Because, like, a lot of the time it's, like, villainized and, like, made into this evil thing. When autism isn't evil, it's not good, it's not bad. It's just, like, it's there.
What do you mean evil? You think it's made evil or it's just made, like, like different and weird?
All
and
of the above.
Okay.
Because there's so much, like, there's so much misinformation out there. Some that comes from, like, organizations that claim to be for like, autistic people. But meanwhile, they're the ones who, like, speak over us and, like, stomp on our feet.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to start, like, letting autistic people speak up for themselves. Because, like, then you'll see the truth. Like, for me, like, with my autism, it's, like, it's not a good thing. It's not a bad thing. Like, I would not be who I am without it. That's for sure. And it's, like, yeah, it has its bad parts, but it also has its good parts. Like, trust me, every autistic person you're going to meet is 1,000 times more interesting than any neurotypical you're going to meet. I don't care.
No offense, Mom. Actually, I'm not neurotypical, yeah, so there you go. Okay. In fact, I think the majority of people probably aren't neurotypical, even
so it's really
if they've
not
never
typical.
Been diagnosed with anything. Like one thing that when the neuropsychologist did the intake for me with you, right, when she was asking all these questions that obviously you couldn't answer about your birth or about when you were a toddler and all the things that you did, and with every question she would ask, I was like, oh my God, yes, how did I miss this huge meteor in this, like,
I'm curious, do you have an example?
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you were younger and even till now, you know, the aspect of being obsessed with everything that you're obsessed with, but having a really hard time listening or focusing on anything that someone else wants to share with you, you know, right, which is kind of not typical. I mean, Dad is like that too.
But then again, he does have ADHD.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But is he open about that on the podcast?
Oh, totally.
Okay, yeah. I didn't want to, like, out him or anything.
Oh, no. And he has ADHD. And, you know, 50 to 70% of people who are diagnosed with ADHD, and I believe autism also, it is biological. It's genetic.
Yeah. Ian has ADHD. I have ADHD. Yeah. Dad has ADHD.
I'm pretty sure I have it.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, lie.
But so, you know, you start hearing these things that the neuropsychologist asks, and number one, you're thinking to yourself, how did I miss this? And number two, you're like, oh my God, you know, this reminds me so much of this person that I knew growing up, or this person that I knew, and all these questions. Like, when you really break it down, you're like, oh my God, this explains so much about either my aunt or a cousin that I have or a friend, or, you know, you start to really hone in on so much makes sense now, because these questions they ask are so different than what we grew up believing autism to be, right? So in my mind, having that experience and that intake, not only did it help me to understand you so well, I started to understand things about people in my past also.
And it, like, helps you learn about what autism actually is based off of what you've been told.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, you start thinking to yourself, oh God, you know, I grew up with grown-ups and stuff who, if it was today, I'm sure they would be on the spectrum. But they just were never diagnosed because they didn't have that very narrow range and idea of what autism looked like. So it really, even though the evaluation was for something, or the intake was for you, it really opened my eyes to so much that I had never thought about before. I don't know. It was kind of an interesting process for me too, even on my, you know, on my own without you. Okay. And then when you were in the evaluation, is there anything you want to share with anybody out there who's thinking about getting evaluated? What was it? What you expected, what you not expected, what were your big takeaways from the actual process?
Honestly, I mean, like, I was so scared to do it, but it was I knew how worth it was going to be, and it was pretty much what you'd expect, like drawing shapes, talking about yourself, which was great because I love talking about myself, as you may know, and the One part of it that I really hated, though, was, like, they had me, like, click this button every time I heard or saw, like, a specific number. And it was just, like, it was 15 minutes of it at a time. It was the worst.
Do you know what they were looking for with that?
I think it was, like, to test my patience. I don't know.
No, but you think?
Probably, because, like, I nearly fell asleep, like, four times.
I mean, I'm sure there's so many hidden things in what seems, like, such an obvious, you know, like, drawing shapes. And they probably weren't looking for anything that you think they were.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. And we went, we traveled into the city a few times.
Into New York,
yep. And you know, it was definitely a process. You missed a bunch of school, and
I got McDonald's. That was fun.
You did get me. We DoorDashed lunch, and it was the pandemic, and you couldn't eat inside, so we were eating outside, and it was like it was very strange being the pandemic. Also, you had to wear but you couldn't wear a mask because
I did wear my mask.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, there was just like one part where she asked me to take it down so that like she could see. Like how my, I don't know, like what my expressions looked like or like how my mouth was moving. I'm not really sure looking back. Honestly, like a lot of it is fuzzy to me now. I have terrible memory.
And it was hours at a time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I guess it really, it's an involved process. And at the end of it, you're sort of waiting. And it was so hard because, you know,
I was so constantly anxious. Like, I didn't feel like I could do anything except wait for my results.
Yeah, you were really...
I was a wreck.
You were a wreck. And we didn't know what your results were going to be. I mean, I was pretty positive you were going to have ADHD. That I kind of knew. But the autism factor was interesting because, you know, I don't know if... We weren't sure, you know. Right. We didn't know.
In all honesty, for there were like a few months where I was teetering like between like, okay, I have autism. No, I have ADHD. No, I have autism. No, I have ADHD. And I was like, there's no way I have both. I'm not like that weird. And turns out I am that weird.
No, you're not.
It's a good thing.
Okay,
it's not a bad thing. Okay. Like, it's. I mean, like. I know, like, saying, like, oh, I am that weird, like, gives it, like, bad, maybe it sounds like it's giving bad connotations, but, like, being weird is, like, my freedom.
Yeah, no, I love being weird, too, so I get it. I get it. I do. I love being weird, too, so I totally understand. We're actually putting out one of our merch t-shirts that we're putting out for Mental Health Awareness Month is Please Don't Call Me Normal, because I love being weird and different, you know, and I love that you're embracing that aspect of yourself, too. And I know it's taken time. So when we got the results, there was part of me that was like, you know, you're really waiting for someone else to tell you whether or not, you know, all
you
these
are
huge,
who you are.
Yeah. All these huge things about the course of your future.
And like your past too, because like it explains so much. Like I remember I was like celebrating when I got the news, because like, oh my god, I have answers. This is me. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. I have an explanation.
Mm-hmm.
It made me so happy. I was like crying. I was like, so I know who I am now. I have an explanation for who I am, and this is why I do this, and this is why I'm like this, and like, oh my god.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were really happy, and I was a little bit nervous that she was going to say that, you know, that you weren't on the spectrum at all. I would have been surprised if she didn't, just because with the intake and everything. I mean, all the questions that she was asking me, and I was sort of like, yeah, that too, she did that. You know, so there was a lot of things that made sense, but there was part of me that felt like you were going to be disappointed if you hadn't gotten it.
I probably would have, but it's also like, I wouldn't even think it's just like that, like, I mean, it was like I was kind of like building this up for myself so much. And it was also just like I desperately craved those answers. It was like a necessity for my state of being. Like, and like, if I don't think I would have been like that invested in it if I wasn't autistic.
You came to me in December and you got your diagnosis August 16th or
something. Yeah, 2 days before my birthday.
So there were a whole bunch. Oh, yeah, it was a birthday present.
Yeah, it really was. I remember you were, like, focused on, like, okay, like, let's, like, okay, but, like, it's important for you to, like, be focused on your education with this. And it was just, like, okay, but, like, let's focus on, like, I know who I am. Mm-hmm. This is me.
Right. And so there was a lot of waiting in there. It was December to August. And then you started school and, you know, we were going to get you an IEP.
My accommodations.
Your accommodations.
Or like a 504.
Yeah,
we're
Right. And again, I don't know any of this. Right. Like, this is not my.
It's like, I can't blame you because I wasn't really doing the research for myself anyway. So it's like.
Right. But, you know, you feel like as a parent, here you are taking on this responsibility that, you know, we're taught so many things. Right. We talk about how to deal with, you know, kids who, I don't know, you know,
like they're different. Like, yeah, it's always like in the sense like, oh, how do you like get your kid to treat different kids nicely? Like how to explain different kids to your kids who are supposedly normal.
Right, right. We have all these things that we, you know, that we're kind of told how to deal with, right? Even like mental health stuff, there's a lot out there now, even though it's, you know, it still needs to get better. But this was something that I was like, okay, I truly know nothing about this. And here I am, you know, navigating these waters like without a captain. I'm supposed to be the captain of this ship. And, well, and you know, and it's hard because you feel like you're in charge and you're supposed to make everything better, but you're sort of like, I don't even know where to start. And that's scary. And you know, so I reached out to people who I knew had kids who had gone through something similar. And that was a game changer for me that, you know, I called somebody who I know her daughter had recently gone through something similar. And that really was a ripple effect. It kind of put everything into action for me, which is why I think it's so important that we're all so open about this. But, we went back to school. We were hopeful that it was going to make everything better. And then you want to talk a little bit about what happened when you went back to school, because you've been having a hard time with school before that.
Yeah. So I, like the year before, like with the pandemic and stuff, like everything shifted and I was virtual for like a long time. And like, then I went back to school, but then I got COVID. So I ended up, and it was like late in the year. So I ended up, doing virtual for the rest of the school year. And then they just shoved us back in full time. And like, that's going to like be like a detriment to everybody. And like, especially like the kid who was just diagnosed with autism, ADHD, and a learning disorder, and like who was already struggling so badly with school. And like, I was like shoved in there, and like, and it was like full time, and like it was fully in school. And like, even before that, we'd been doing half days. They didn't like gently like bring us into it. It just felt like we were like pushed into it. And so like, I just like, I floundered. I didn't know what to do. I just like, I kind of broke down.
And you were having a whole lot of sensory stuff.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. One of my, like, my issues with it were like classes, social stuff. And then there were the hallways. That was such a big issue for me. Cause like how big was that school? Like over 1,000 kids, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so it was block scheduling. So everyone is going to their classes at the same time. And so that means I was in the hallway with like, the hallways were packed. Everyone pushes and shoves into one another. And like, I couldn't handle it. Everyone was talking and like, they were with their friends and like they were like pushing into me and they were like walking too slowly, and I'm terrible with that. I can't handle people who are walking slowly in front of me. And so I would just like nearly broke down crying just like walking through the hallways.
Mm-hmm. And you were going to guidance a lot.
Right.
Coming home, you and I were fighting a lot.
Yeah.
There was just a lot of...
I mean, I still like have a lot of trouble with like doing my work and stuff, but mm-hmm. It was like extreme.
Right. okay. And then we figured out at a certain point, I think we realized that it just couldn't go on like this. Mm-hmm. And all right, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about your new school.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
So when you went back to school, it was really hard. Lots of stuff were happening. I mean, it was pretty much a disaster. And I guess I there was part of me that thought once you got diagnosed, it was sort of going to be this like miracle cure that, you know, everything was going to be better and you were going to know about yourself. And obviously that's not the case.
Right.
And so, you know, the issues were still the issues. And in some ways they are even magnified because, again, like you said, you guys were thrown back in full time and that was really hard for you. It was sensory overload after sort of working in your quiet room and, you know, having like your little setup and, you know, being able to do whatever you needed to and take breaks when you needed to.
And I was staying in my pajamas the whole day and like, and I always had like a sort, I've always like kind of had issues with like jeans and stuff and like that kind of fabric. And so I was like, I was wearing regular clothes again. I had to act like a normal human again. I had to mask full time. And it was like taking like such, it was taking so much out of me.
Mm-hmm. And then there was one day when you really kind of had a breakdown and you were in the guidance office and, right. And she called me to pick you up. And at that point I remember thinking to myself, this can't stay at the same. I was so at that moment, I think it was a little bit you testing me like, okay, are we going to really do something about this?
Yeah.
And I think a little bit of me finally realizing, oh shit, I am not taking this quite as seriously as I need to.
Yeah.
And so I hired an advocate who we went to and we sort of were exploring different ideas.
I had the idea to move to a new school because I heard that if it got bad enough, then the school would pay for it themselves. And I was like, a new school, like a school that like takes care of my needs and interests. Huh. That sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely so much different than my old school where I maybe had one or two conversations with each of my teachers before leaving.
Mm-hmm. And it was complicated. She sort of explained to us that we wouldn't get paid for because you were already a junior and the district would probably just put it off and not pay for it, you know, because there was so you had so little time left in the district. And you know, we didn't know it was going to be a lot of court battle. And by the time we got done with the court battle, you'd probably be in your senior year or almost a senior. And this was something that couldn't wait. So she recommended a school and we kind of were rushing it. So we didn't look at too many schools.
Yeah.
And we went and we looked at this school and I guess everybody's sort of wondering what's different about this school, what's better and what is maybe is like, do you still need to get more help with?
Well, definitely what's better is the smaller environment. Like there were thousands of kids in my old school and like this school is middle school and high school, but it's like 25 kids per grade. So it's like so much smaller, so much better. And like the hallways are so much clearer, which is great. And like each class is 15 kids or less, which like that was such a big change. And I was so like struck when I was like, when it happened, it was like, oh my God, like this is so different. I like it so much better. And I'm still so thankful for the smaller class size. It's really allowed for a much better experience. And You know, I still obviously struggle, like, socially, academically, but now I have, like, resources to help me combat that. And there's also the teachers, because, like, it's not necessarily that my teachers at my old school were horrible.
Or no, you anything. Had you had a few really wonderful teachers, too.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't that. It was just that, like, these teachers were actually people I could get to know. And, like with my English teacher now, I discuss, like, Marvel comics with him and stuff. Meanwhile, like, I got the chance to talk to my old English teacher once, and that was when I would let her know I was transferring schools.
And that's just because they're so overwhelmed.
Yeah. And
they're just, like, they probably feel as overwhelmed as you did in that classroom.
There were, like, 25 to 30 kids in each class. I honestly feel, like, so bad for them. Like, mm-hmm. It was insane.
It was a lot. So there are a lot of good things and still stuff that you're working on. But again, they sort of cater to kids who have
ADHD and anxiety.
Yeah, ADHD and anxiety. Not as much autism, but they are.
But I'm sure there's a good population of kids who deal with that.
Right. And the school, no matter what, just wants to support you. So it's really been great. It's extremely far.
Yeah. It's an hour and a half drive there and back. It's an hour and a half drive there. It's an hour and a half drive back every day.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth it. Because, like, even though we never ended up doing the IEP or, like, the 504, they're still honoring my accommodations. And I'm even auditing one of my classes now because I was struggling with it. And, like, it's made my life so much easier. And, like, the person I discussed about it with, I discussed it with was the assistant head of school. I didn't even know the name of my principal or assistant or my vice principal at my old school. Mm-hmm. I still don't.
Right. And I think that was also part of it, was because, you know, you were never a behavior problem. You were never sent to the office, you know, for that kind of thing. And so you really were kind of like, you know, you're not a star student.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not the type of kid who, you know, you're not in the honor society.
I'm just kind of mixed in with the crowd.
Yeah. And so I think you got, you know, you definitely got lost in the shuffle some, as I mean, look, that the pandemic made everything so hard. And everybody knows I am the biggest. I mean, I love teachers so freaking much. And I was one. And I'm not at all putting this on teachers at all. But it is overwhelming, you know. To be sort of in that large middle range of students who, you know, kind of sometimes get overlooked. And so because you weren't a problem or anything, I think that the type of help that you really needed wasn't really recommended or suggested.
Yeah.
Teachers never came to me or nobody ever came to me and said, hey, you know, maybe we should talk about Mia, or like, it just never happened.
Yeah, and like, when I did end up having problems in school, it, like, my teachers were too overwhelmed to, like, mm-hmm. actually do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, like, I always just been, like, it felt like I was a background character. Because, like, I wasn't very memorable. I wasn't, like, I didn't have tons of friends. I mean, like, I was never, like, popular or anything. And, like, I didn't have, like, inside jokes with teachers like some students did. And, I just, like, wasn't memorable or anything. And at this school, it feels like my teachers actually know me and I get to talk to them. And, like, it's just so different. Mm-hmm. It's, like, I never thought a teacher would, like, remember, like would actually, like, remember my name every time they saw me, I guess. And, like, I never felt like I would, like, actually, like, have relationships with my teachers the way I do now.
Mm-hmm. What have been the best resources for you? I'm so interested. Like, along this whole journey, now it's been, you know, a couple years since you've really started thinking about it. What would you say, you know, have been the best resources for you?
I guess probably, well, when I was, like, starting to, like, self-diagnose and, like, figure out what was going on, obviously, like, TikTok and social media were big because, like I said, I would see all of these posts that would, like, discuss, like, oh, haha, ADHD moment, or, like, hey, this is actually an autistic trait in girls, and like they would be educational, or they would just joke about like, like this thing happens like with ADHD, and it's like, that's like a bit too eerily similar to like what I do. So obviously like that really helped me out.
Just maybe
like,
next week for our website, you'll make a list of a bunch of resources that we can put out for everybody. Yeah. Would you like to do that?
Okay. Yeah. Do's and don'ts, maybe.
I also wanted to ask you what parents can do out there to help make the world, schools, and everything like you were feeling easier for kids with, you know, who are neurodiverse. What can we say to our children to help make them allies, in a sense, like to help make them a people who support people like you?
Well, the best thing you can do for anyone is educate them. Help them like see the true light of a situation. Like I was saying, like there's so many misconceptions of autism out there, and the main thing you need to do is listen to people who are actually autistic. That is the biggest thing you can do. Listen to me today. Find your favorite autistic TikToker out there. Listen to them and a few others maybe.
I bet there are some good books too out there for kids.
I'm sure. Yeah. And find ones that are written by actual autistic writers, because like, sure, maybe a neurotypical person could accurately represent us, but they've been speaking over us for too long, and it's time that like we're able to finally speak up for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Right. So just a basic empathy and everything. And also, I think not to assume that everyone is neurotypical, that if somebody is doing something like that, you know, sometimes it seems like someone's being rude or someone is, you know, being abrupt. And I think the first thing that we need to think to ourselves, which is something I've had to do, honestly, with you, there were times when I would say to myself, oh, my God, look how she's speaking to that person or whatever. And now I have to say to myself, wait a minute, this is literally something that she can't control. And so I think a lot of times that, you know, if we say to our kids, look, sometimes when somebody's talking to you or you're at school and somebody is talking in class or whatever, and they appear like they're being rude, they might have something else going on. Like there might be something in their brain that actually doesn't allow for them to have the patience or, you know, the know-how to act in the same exact way that you would as a neurotypical.
And usually if I'm being rude, I either don't know it. I think I'm like just being a normal human being. I think I'm just like making conversation, or it's because I'm extremely burnt out and I deal with like insane burnout. And like so many autistics do, pretty much all of us do, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I think also on the other hand, you know, you recently said to me that someone in your life had used the wrong terminology. You don't like the term Asperger's, and they use the term Asperger's. And you said to them, I actually, you know, prefer you don't use that term because that, well, I guess people can research that. But basically you were patient and you explained to her the reasoning. And I think on our end, we sort of need that patience. I think sometimes we're so worried about, you know, upsetting people, or that we're a little bit afraid sometimes to try to have the conversation and try to learn, because, you know, you don't want people to think that, like, because you're not using the right terminology or whatever, that you're
a terrible person.
Yeah, you know, that you're uneducated or this and that. The terminology is changing so quickly, and everything changes so quickly. Sometimes it's a little hard to keep up, but we want to try. You know, so I do think that sometimes, you know, you have to sort of take a deep breath when someone uses the wrong term or whatever and be like, actually, can I just explain to you why this term is better? Because we just don't know. So, you know, the patience with that. Someone also asked, actually, a bunch of teachers asked, of course, because teachers just want to help you so much. What can teachers do to make classroom environments better and more, you know, sensory, like, what's the word? Friendly.
Sensory friendly. Fidget toys, definitely. Fidget toys are one of the most important parts. And maybe, like, if you can, like, I know it can be expensive, but if you can find some that aren't expensive, noise-canceling headphones are so great. I would love a pair myself, personally. Cough, cough, mom.
And to maybe also to normalize them in your classroom.
Right.
Right? That someone who wants to wear, you know, noise-canceling headphones, is just it's just a common thing to do in the classroom.
Yeah, and like, it's important to give kids some space and, like, some time to themselves, I guess. Like, as someone who deals with, like, insane burnout, I assure you, like, teachers out there, please give your kids a break every once in a while. Like, whether they're high schoolers or 5 years old, breaks are important no matter who you are. Like, and it can be so easy to work yourself to, like, to completely burning out.
And your new school has a built-in break time.
Yeah. Break time is great, whether it's a snack break or, like, a reading break in quotation marks, where really you just, like, give the students some time to, like, give them some time to breathe and, like, stretch, or just, like, 15 minutes of, like, of time. That'd be great. And also, if we're going back to sensory friendly things, softest rugs you can imagine. Please give me soft rugs.
What you mean, like, for story time and stuff when they're younger?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. Like,
sometimes I could never handle the rugs that the teachers got. Like, you know, like, the fuzzy, like, blankets and stuff? Like,
yep.
If you can find that material in a rug, I'm sold.
Oh, that's great. Are there certain habits that you've started doing or things that you've changed since your diagnosis that have helped you?
I think I've started simming more. And I've also noticed, like, if, like, I watch, like, a TikTok from someone who's autistic, if I watch something where someone's autistic, start to notice, like, I kind of, like, remind myself, oh, hey, that's me. And I start, like, acting more autistic, I guess. Like I start, like, fidgeting more and, like, flapping my hands more and, like, jumping around more. And, like,
why do you think that is?
I think it's because, like, I'm so used to masking.
So it gives you the permission to do it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, that's me. And then it's like, so I can be me. La, la, la.
Oh, that's interesting. And stimming is what?
Everyone stims, really. It's not even just a neurodiverse thing. It's literally just, like when you, like, hum a song, or, like, blink your eyes really fast, or, like, if you tap your foot, or, like, shake your hands. It's just, like, little movements and, like, little things that you do throughout the day.
Mm-hmm. So you think you've had more permission to act like you?
Yeah, definitely.
Uh-huh. I've noticed that also. I think that you have more confidence when you're doing the things that feel comfortable and just come to you naturally.
Yeah, and honestly, sometimes it feels like I need research to be myself. Like, I was just kind of thinking that, because it's like, so I'm autistic. That means I get to do things now, and I don't have to yell at myself for them. But what are those things?
Mm-hmm.
I still really feel like that a lot.
And so, okay, what are your hopes? This is my question for you as your mom. Mm-hmm. What are your hopes for yourself, like, and your lifestyle, and how you're able to live as an autistic person who is, you know, you're almost an adult. You're almost 18. I mean, technically an adult.
Yeah.
And, you know, next stage of your life is coming and everything. What are your hopes and dreams as someone who now knows you're on the spectrum?
Well, I'm 16, so don't rush it.
No, I'm not rushing it. Trust me. Trust me. I'm not rushing it.
But my hopes are that I can find the accommodations I need throughout life. I still don't really know what I need yet. I'm definitely not ready to be an adult, but that's a conversation for later. I'm really hoping, like, I can just, like, become my true self, because I still don't know who that is. And, like, I'd love to really, like, find myself before I become an adult and, like, know who I really am and what I want in life. Like, I think I know the majority of what I want. And, like, And I just want to be like happy. That's all mm-hmm. I want. And mm-hmm. I want to be comfortable and safe.
Mm-hmm. I think it's changed our ideas about what we're looking for next as far as, you know, college or whatever, like the what is important and what's not, mm-hmm. right? I think that that our focus has shifted a lot to we need to find somewhere that's going to be really wonderful and nurturing and accommodating. And, you know, and those are sort of the things that we're looking for the most. And, you know, that I talk a lot about how I grew up, you know, sort of being told that you go to the college, the best college that you can get into with the best name, because that's just how we all grew up kind of. And I think now my feelings on that have completely changed to I kind of don't give a crap about the name or the, you know, the accolades or whatever. I care that it's a nurturing environment for you and that it has the accommodations that you need.
That's so, how I feel.
Yeah, I think that that has been a big change. Also, we got you an executive function coach. We got you an academic coach.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love her.
Yeah, and that has been really wonderful also that, you know, that it's been truly an incredible thing. You know, it's not therapy and it's not a teacher. It's kind of like both for school kind of put together.
Yeah, but it's like kind of like dialed down.
Yeah.
Like, it's really nice. And like, she's so great to talk to. I really like getting to work with her. And like, it's like so great working with her because it allows me to just like sit down, do my work, talk about what I need to talk about, then I do my work, forces me to do my work, which I really need. It's great.
Mm-hmm. And I was pretty strategic about who I found for that.
And I love her. So
yeah, I really, you know, I didn't want just any academic coach, although I'm sure there are a ton out there. I really wanted someone who I felt like you could be yourself with. And she seemed like a really awesome fit. So that would be kind of be one of my recommendations to parents that if you're number one, if you're going to do that, to just really sort of, you know, find the right one. It's sort of like a therapist or, you know, or a tutor or something. You kind of want the person to jive like with your child. And I think that's made a big difference. Well, I just want to say that I am so incredibly, incredibly proud of you. I hope
Thank
you know
you.
That.
I do. Thank you.
It has been a journey. It has had its ups and downs. We have had our ups and downs with it. It has been an uphill climb, but I feel like every step of it has been worth it. I'm glad that we've come as far as we have, and I know that we still have a lot of work to do together to get you all those things that you want for your future and that we want for you for your future. But I just, you know, I hope everyone out there knows that the journey is, you know, it is hard, but it is worth it. And I love you so much. And I know everybody out there right now is supporting you and is grateful to you for being so open about it.
Well, I want to say like same to all of them, all the things you just said. And there's no one I'd rather go on this journey with. Aww. So
I love you, sweetie. You did. You wrote me the sweetest Mother's Day card. It was really, really sweet.
I'm glad to hear you think that.
Yeah, I really do. All right. Well, Dad and I love you, and
I love
we're
you
so
too.
Proud. If you want to listen to the other episodes with Mia, go through. She has an episode about coming out, which was really awesome. The Chloe Hayden episode was really good. The episode with Ian is fun.
It's not good, but it's fun.
I mean, it's a fun episode. We got a lot of great feedback about that episode.
Glad to hear it. They want more.
Yeah, and we have merch coming soon, so keep an eye out for that.
It's my face all over.
Everything has Mia's face just plastered on it.
Yeah, we have a sweatshirt that's just like my face a billion times. No, joking. But go buy their merch.
Yes, and also date night questions, please.
Oh, yeah, go buy that.
Yeah. MarriageandMartinis.com/DNQ, MNM podcast for 20% off, our biggest discount for listeners. And thank you all so much for all your support. We love you, and we will see you next week.
And I want to get the last word in. Bye.